What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented musician who has recorded and produced some of the biggest names in the music business. Through his vision for composition and production, he has become smooth jazz top music producers of all time. Please put your hands together and welcome back Grammy Award-winning music producer, guitarist, and recording engineer, Paul Brown. What's happening, Paul?
Bud, what's happening, brother?
Oh, nothing much, man. How's it going? Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure for me to talk to a veteran and somebody as seasoned as a musician you are, man. It's truly all mine, man. Trust me. Well, Paul, man, you're back, man, and you recently released a new CD titled Love, You Found Me. You know, I had a chance to chop it up with you with your past CD, Foreign Exchange, man. I mean, you know, how is it different between the two CDs, style-wise?
Well, Foreign Exchange was a duet record with Marc Antoine, and it was, music that we sort of wrote separately and then got together and did our thing on. And then he did a little, I did a little, and we kind of put it all together. But it was really based on, the conversation between two guitarists, and it was a little bit different. My Love You Found Me is a little more personal album, but and there's a couple of vocal tunes on there like Love You Found Me that it kind of went in a little bit different direction, but that's the same, it's basically my music.
Oh yeah. You know, aside from doing your own music, Paul, I mean, you had a chance to produce Jesse J's Hot Sauce album. I mean, how did that collaboration come together, man? Because Jessie J, man, she's fire on the sax. And, with your production, man, that was just a winning combination, in my opinion.
Well, that was the third record I've done with her. And we started off back about, 5 or 6 years ago now. She came to one of my shows and was looking to get me to produce some stuff for her. And I was actually at the time putting together what I wanted. I wanted to put together an all-female band. I just thought it would be kind of fun and cool. And so I auditioned her and on a tenor, and I had never heard her play tenor sax before, and she just blew me away with her tone. I mean, she's got an amazing, large tone for a woman, especially on the tenor saxophone, which is pretty unusual. And she started playing in my band for about a year, and we did a bunch of gigs together, and then I wrote that song, Tequila Moon, and we decided to try to get her a deal, which we did, and, got her hooked up with management and finished that first record, and we did another one, and then we just finished the third one. So it's been a long, few years working with Jesse, writing and producing.
Wow. You wear many hats as a musician, Paul. With your years of experience as a music producer, I mean, when did you really discover your talents to bring other talents out of other musicians and artists?
Well, I was originally a drummer, and I was always in bands. And for some reason, I was always sort of the one who came up with the arrangements for the songs. And so I was kind of producing all along. And when I ended up getting a job in a recording studio in my early 20s, I started bringing bands in the studio and producing them, and that's kind of how I got away from engineering and started producing more. And then finally, after about 10 years of basically making a living as an engineer, I started getting hired as a producer and stopped engineering for other people eventually, and just engineered the stuff that I was producing. And it kind of went like that. But from the beginning, I've always been, wanting to be involved in the structural, parts of the song and coming up with the roadmap and the vibe and the groove and the overall, whatever you want to call the painting, all the pieces of the painting and putting the frame on it. And I'm even doing mastering now, which is the next, part of that whole process of just finishing it off and, like I said, framing it. And it's kind of an all-inclusive thing.
Now, that's what time it is, Paul. I think as a producer, man, I think as producers, we grow into the different sides of the recording, from recording to engineering to, now you're saying you're mastering your own projects. I really think it's the time that we put behind the board and just working with different artists is how we pick up these different traits. And because of your engineering background, I believe sonically you're able to kind of see where the project's going to go before it actually hits the airwaves and the radio things. Is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was monitoring your tracks. With your extensive background as an engineer, man, give me some useful techniques that you've used over all the records that you've mixed. How are you able to translate your mix as well to the consumer radios, the car stereos, and iPods? I mean, what does Paul Brown usually do to get those mixes, references, all on those good systems?
Well, I mean, I'm still learning, but my mentor, Lee Hirschberg, who was basically getting my start as an engineer, I mean, he did all the like early Sinatra and a lot of that sort of thing. And he's also a mastering engineer. And he always told me, he said, learn how to master, but don't let anybody see you do it, because they'll probably all want you to do it for them, and it's not something that you really want to spend a whole lot of time with. But he always felt that if you learn how to master, it makes you a better mixing engineer, because you're dealing with stuff that other people have done and trying to bring out the things that you hear in there. So when you get back in the studio mixing, those experiences, come to the forefront. You're like, okay, if I was mastering this, what would I do to it at this point in the mix? And it definitely makes you take some other choices when you're mixing. So it's kind of interesting. Even in choosing sounds along the way of arrangement, I mean, you're constantly, I mean, that's what I do. I kind of mix as I go. I was working with a singer the other day, and they were commenting what they had the headphones on. They were like, it already sounds like a record in my headphones. And it's like, and when we got done doing the vocal, I spent like another, 5 minutes and the thing was done. And basically it's like when I choose a drum, I choose a bass, I choose a keyboard, and every step of the way I'm kind of mixing. And with that mastering in mind and everything else, and putting the pieces together from a sonic point of view as well as a musical point of view. And when you get to the end, those pieces fit together a lot easier. In the old days when I used to do a lot of mixing for other people, it was always like, you want a good mix? Give me a good arrangement and you'll get a good mix. And it's very difficult to get a good mix out of a poor arrangement when the instruments are fighting each other, musically and sonically and rhythmically. So all those choices, they all just—it's funny how they all work together, and to the end.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think now with the DAW systems, as a keyboardist, and I do some recording engineer myself. I love that I have the opportunities now to kind of mix along the way, as like I'm pre and posting mix at the same time as I'm tracking, really trying to find the space within the song. And it's just really cool the way technology kind of just makes our job a little easier, so it kind of takes the guesswork out of some things that we have to do. I've really listened to your sound over the years, Paul, and me along with a lot of guys who I know, you've really had a contemporary sound as a producer and a musician. I mean, what other styles really have influenced your style as a Paul Brown sound?
Well, that's another thing. It's like that, Lee Hirschberg is constantly yelling at me, saying, your spectrum of sound is too big. And and I've had other people say to me, including like George Benson, say, man, that you got too much bass on that record, man, or whatever. I just like a really large sound, I guess, coming at me. I like it to sort of surround me, I have the speakers. I use the same speakers that Al Schmidt and Bill Schnee and Lee and Ed Cherney use, and they're basically, those are the guys that are mixing probably 90% of the music that comes out. And the monitors make a big difference, although these days I even been mixing even on headphones. So it's a personal taste thing. I like the mixes to sort of start from the bottom up, and I don't like mixes that sort of are from the top down. I don't know, it didn't sound right to me. So I like a lot of booty, and I like a lot of thump. And, you know, it just makes it easier to put the sprinkle, the high stuff in there for me. And when stuff it has a lot of high end and not a lot of bottom end, I don't find it pleasing to right. listen to.
No, I agree with you. You know, coming from a hip hop and R&B background, man, I mean, there's a lot of meat and potatoes in our mixes. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of times there is too much overage on a lot of the lows. What are some of the techniques that you've used on some heavy bottom end songs that really kind of tame the lows in the mix where it kind of balances out?
Well, I use this, you know, most of the stuff that I do is analog. I hear a huge difference, like when people bring in stuff for me to mix, and, you know, typically now on Pro Tools, they bring it in and it's all coming through the mix bus of Pro Tools in two tracks.
Yeah.
And I listen to it, and even if it's a good mix, as soon as I break it out to separate channels on my board, analog, it just sounds so much better to me. And it's just no comparison. The width, the depth, the high the high end, and just the basic fidelity that's coming at you just seems so much more detailed, and there's so much more space to work with.
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference. In terms of the bottom end, I mean, I definitely take away bottom end from things that shouldn't be down there clouding it up, and but the things that should be down there, a lot of times I'll take off high end, you know, just for the same purpose, but just to create, you know, a large, you know, V in the mix where you can really stick some bottom end. And you know, with these days, I mean, in the old days when we had to cut vinyl, you know, to make a long playing record, I mean, you just couldn't get that much bottom end on there because literally the stylus would jump out of the groove, and you know, and the phase correlation, if it wasn't correct, it would really be difficult to keep the needle on the record.
Right.
But with CDs, we don't have that problem. So a lot of people overdo the bottom end just because they can, you know, and they like the way it sounds. And it is difficult to translate sometimes on different systems. I have a kind of a cool system in my computer room where I, you know, it's not in my studio, it's in another room. And I just have a consumer type of setup. It does have a subwoofer, but it sounds great in there. And I find that if I can make it sound good on my monitors, the only time there's ever even a question is if the stuff has a lot of stuff below 50 cycles, because I don't have a subwoofer in my mixing speakers, but they go down, they're pretty true down to about 80 cycles, but anything below that is kind of guesswork. So I do a lot of cutting of those frequencies, you know, generally. So I try to keep everything up in the sort of, you know, 60 to 100 cycle range for that sure. super bottomy stuff. But, you know, a lot of that sub stuff, you know, you just, it's funny, I worked with this one mixer I hired to do a remix of a song, and he was still using NS10s, which, you know, I've done a lot of mixes. Fortunately, it's been a long time since I had to work on them, but and I was watching the speakers themselves, and the woofer of the speaker is literally jumping out of the box and completely distorted. And I'm saying, well, how can you listen to it at that with that much distortion in the speakers? He's like, well, for me, if I don't hear that distortion, then I know I don't have enough. So everybody's got their, you know, way of doing things.
Yeah.
So they get what they think they want, but that seems a little guessworky to me. But
yeah, you know, I totally agree.
Works for him.
Yeah, you know, I say, hey, man, you really know your monitors. You know how, you know, other mixes translate well on them. So I mean, hey. You know, whatever works, I guess.
Yeah, mine are very revealing. And, you know, you put some stuff up on there. I used to use Genelecs, some big Genelecs, and they sound so good that, you know, you can put stuff up and immediately it sounds good.
Sure.
And you don't have to do much, but those speakers just are way overhyped. So, you know, it's never going to sound that good, and I don't like that. So I use these Tannoys with the Doug Sachs mastering crossovers in them, with a couple of 2,000 watt Yamaha amps, and
nice.
It's very revealing. And you do have to work a little harder, but the speakers are not fatiguing at all. they don't have that super high end, so you can, you know, I can work for 12 hours and it doesn't hurt my ears. I don't listen crazy loud, but even that normal listening with Genelex after 12 hours, you're pretty fatigued.
Wow. Yeah, I believe in this. I mean, like in some of those speakers, man, they're really beefed up. And, you know, I tell a lot of guys, like, well, I mean, it sounds good in the room, man, but if you take it out to another system, I bet you're not using a lot of EQ because it sounds beefy and high and bright already. So it's going to sound really flat if you take it to another studio or another a system mm-hmm. that doesn't have those frequency ranges on the speakers, you know. So it's, yeah, it can be misleading at times, you know those monitors, man.
Oh yeah, you gotta, well, the thing about a lot of those monitors is you have to have roll-offs. I mean, you have to roll up the high end, you have to roll up the low end just for that reason.
Yeah. You know, what do you consider some of the red flags, you know, that kind of go up in your head when you feel that a song is being overproduced, you know, really taking the shine away from the groove and the artist?
Well, I mean, the song, you know, has to be there foremost. And I find that when stuff, if I'm listening, say, to, you know, whether it's a saxophone or a vocal or a guitar, whatever the main instrument is, I want my focus to be on that. I never really want it to go away from that, you know, when it doesn't need to go away from that. I mean, sometimes it's nice in a bridge, or it's nice in, you know, with some background vocals or whatever that sort of take over.
Sure.
But generally speaking, I don't like to be distracted by things on the side, or you know, melodic things that are going on that fight with the main instrument. So I mean, I tend to simplify a lot, you know, and if a part really helps the song and really helps the main focus, then I love it. But once it starts to take away or diminish, then, you know, it's overdone to me. And there's a lot of that going on. And I think a lot of people get seduced by a sound or a thing, or, you know, some sort of melodic structure that's in the background. But I think in the end, it takes away from the overall experience.
Now, how do you balance between making a sound for commercial radio success and also trying to maintain a balance, your creative flow in the studio where you really feel strongly behind it, and you know, there's great musicianship? I mean, do you find yourself kind of toggling between the two, or do you really just focus?
No, not
on
at all.
Music?
I mean, I get asked that quite often, and it's like, I never ever think, oh, this sounds like it's going to work on radio, but for some reason it won't work on a hi-fi system, or it won't work in a club. I just try to make the music sound as good as I think it's going to sound. I really don't think about radio or systems or anything else. So,
right.
I mean, people have always asked me, well, you know, you go into it thinking, you know, you're trying to do this to make it commercial for radio, but I just don't do that.
Right.
Luckily, the stuff that I find, I mean, it's all personal taste. It's a personal taste thing. There really is no right or wrong. And, you know, it just comes down to the stuff that I like, thankfully, has been accepted, you know, in the radio world. But I don't intend to do it that way. It's just sort of the way I hear it. And it's probably from my R&B background and my, you know, engineering background. I have just something about the sonic approach that I take that people find appealing.
No, you know, I bring that up a lot, you know, because it does bother me as a creative producer and composer myself. It's like, well, you know, I really don't consider myself a trendy musician, you know,
right.
But some things I feel that, you know, it just really gives that ear candy to the audience. It could be a particular sound or, you know,
sure.
Different harmony. So yeah, I definitely want to piggyback off what you're saying, because,
well, I mean, I get, you know, during sessions, a lot of times an artist will ask me, they'll say, well, do you think that'll work on radio? I say, well, do you like it? Yes. Do you think it makes a song sound good? Yes. Well, you can just overthink all that. Who cares what
sure.
I mean, they're just going to play it if they think it's interesting.
That's right.
You know, and I think there's very few times, I mean, there's probably occasions that it does happen that some radio person will listen to something and say, you know, that I find that sound offensive. I'm not going to play this record. But I don't think it happens very often.
Right.
I mean, I've had, you know, radio promoters call me and say, you know, I love this song. I remember this one, I had this little Janet Jackson little sample in there going, And it was part of the rhythm. It was like, and he called me and said, you know, can you take that vocal out of there? I said, what vocal? He said, that ah. I said, well, first of all, it's not a vocal. It's just part of the percussion. You know, it happens to be a vocal sound, but it's not a vocal per se. And I asked him, I said, well, do you think it would make the song less cool without that there? He says, yeah, probably. I said, well, why would I take it out then? He says, well, a lot of radio stations just don't want to play a vocal. I said, you know what, man? That's not a vocal. Just leave it. And sure enough, that song went to number one. And you know, that's happened more than once.
Wow.
And you can't go chasing that radio sound. It's just not. I don't do it, but people assume that I do it on a daily basis, but I just have never done it.
Right. No, I totally.
In fact, I go the other way quite often, and they usually come to me. I mean, when I first started doing the Boney James stuff, no jazz artist had ever had an 808 kick on their record.
Right.
You know, and I remember Cliff Goroff, you know, the biggest smooth jazz promoter, radio promoter, saying to me, you know, that boom in there, can you turn that down? I said, no, I'm not going to turn that down. And sure enough, that was, you know, like the start of this huge movement. And you know,
wow.
So, you know, it's been like that forever. And thankfully, people have come around to it. I guess if I had no success and everybody been like, you know what, I don't like that boom, I'm not going to play a record, I'd probably stop using it, maybe.
Maybe.
But, you know, thankfully, that hasn't been the case. So right. I haven't had to adjust my way of doing things much. But I just think people overthink it, you know. I mean, they constantly say, well, I don't think that sound's going to work for radio. I was like, what are you talking about?
Right. We're the decision makers of what sounds great on the radio as creators. You know, we're supposed to set the standards and break down these barriers, man, not follow what the trends are, in my opinion, anyway. So.
You're supposed to make the record and then let people, you know, learn. The record company's got to figure out a way to sell it.
Yeah.
And then the radio's got to figure out a way to play it. And, you know, when it works at its highest level, it's great. But when everybody starts second thinking everything, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So, Paul, what is on the musical agenda for 2011 closing up and going into 2012, man? It's getting close now.
Yeah, well, I'm just finishing up it's going to be my sixth CD, and it'll probably come out in February of 2012, is what I'm hoping. And it's going to be kind of more of the same, but a little more guitar-oriented than production-oriented.
Okay.
At this time, because a lot of times I'll produce a song, and even without the guitar on there, it already sounds like it's probably going to do pretty well. But this time I decided to, like, make it more about, you know, some of the stuff that I'm playing and you know, a little more guitar-oriented. But some nice things, sort of some old sort of CTI approach on three or four songs, and then a real sort of Isley Brothers on a couple of songs.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so some nice stuff.
Well, Paul, it's been a true pleasure having you on my show. You got to come back, man. Talk about your new musical endeavors, man. You know you got a spot here at the Producers Corner, man. I really appreciate your time, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, and hope to see you guys soon.
Sounds good. Have a safe 2011 and 2012.
You too, man.
Take it easy.
Peace.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Paul Brown for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Yeah, man, he's a returning guest, and it's always cool for me to talk to Paul. He has so much experience as a music producer and a recording engineer. And just to get his input and insight on how he attacks a project, it's inspirational, and it's definitely something where we really want to take some note. For more information on Paul Brown, you need to check out his website at www.paulbrownjazz.com. www.paulbrownjazz.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spudtootight.com. www.spudtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you have a Mac, a PC, an iPhone, or an iPod, or an iPad, open up the iTunes store, type in the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.